Welcome to Touchline Radio.
Oh, what a goal!
And welcome to Touchline Radio. Back at you once again, it's Adam Esker, and on this edition, I have a very special guest with me today. Her name is Kendra de St. Aubin, and she is the color commentator for Minnesota United FC, who I like to call the Shotgun Club, because they were formed in just about 3 months, and they're currently underway in their first full season in Major League Soccer. Now, we're going to explore the path she took to get to Minnesota United FC, as her previous experiences range from the NBA to Major League Baseball, before now, of course, working in Major League Soccer. Not to mention that Kendra is the first female color commentator in Major League Soccer history, so we definitely have a lot coming up at you, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this. So I'm here now, of course, with Kendra de St. Aubin. Thank you very much for coming on to Touchline Radio.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So I have to start when the opportunity arose for Minnesota United FC. Did they come knocking, or did the door open for you? How did this really come about?
Well, so this really came about by one of the owners of the team. He's a minority owner. His name is Ben Grossman, but he's also somewhat of a media consultant for Fox. So I got to know Ben in Vancouver at the 2015 Women's World Cup. And so I knew him. He also lived in the Bay Area, not too far from me, where I was living in San Jose, California at the time. So you know how this business is. It's like 6 degrees of separation. You just try to keep relationships open with people because you never know what's going to come about. And late August of last summer, he said, hey, let's get together. Let's catch up. Let's grab some coffee. And, you know, I didn't think much of it. It was just, you know, two friends just meeting up to kind of shoot the breeze and see what's going on in the industry. And I even brought my daughter with me. You know, she wasn't even three at the time, thinking this was a pretty casual meeting. And he just said, hey, look, you know, we've got this Minnesota United team, and he's from Minnesota originally. So I always knew he had the Minnesota roots because in Canada, I saw the Minnesota Twins hat on. So I knew there was a Minnesota connection there always. And he said, we got this team, and, you know, I'd really love you to be a part of it. He's like, I would love for you to be the analyst, the color commentator for the team, for TV. And I literally almost fell off my chair because I'm going into this meeting thinking it's just kind of casual coffee. Let's shoot the breeze, catch up. And he pitched that idea to me and literally almost fell off my chair and was a bit stunned. And he was like, you know, look, I want you for this because I've seen your work. I've worked with you in Canada. I think you can do a great job with this. And I want someone from Minnesota who has those Minnesota ties because they really want to be community oriented with Minnesota United because of the soccer culture here. And he said, so I know you'll have a certain love for this team and this game and this community to be a part of it. And, but he wanted to gauge my interest because he also knew my husband had just taken a job in California, you know, maybe a year or 18 months earlier. So he didn't know what our position was as far as being able to move back and whatnot. So wanted to know if it was even a possibility, but that's how it came about. Ben Grossman, one of the minority owners, kind of pitched that idea to me last August, late August.
Wow. And well, Minnesota is not exactly the first state that you would think would be very soccer centric, to be honest, especially being in Canada. But how would you describe the football culture in Minnesota?
Well, I think that's one of the key pieces is, you know, I think we're finding this with some of the markets, maybe markets that you're like, oh, don't stick out to you as a soccer market. As we put some of these MLS teams in those markets, they're really shining. I mean, take, for example, FC Cincinnati. No MLS team there yet, but watch their game on Wednesday against Chicago, you know, for US Open Cup. They last week they had already sold 18,000 tickets. And they're expecting over 30,000, so much so that ESPN2 is going to go there and broadcast the game. So there's some of these markets, in the, especially in the Midwest, I think people don't view as soccer markets. And then you go there and you discover it and you're like, wow, this is a huge deal. And that's how Minnesota is. So despite having every pro team there is and every college sport there is, right here in the Twin Cities area, the soccer culture has just been thriving. And, you know, they, it goes back to the Stars, the Strikers, the Kicks, you know, all those teams that they had here in Minnesota that have dominated the market here on a minor league level, whether it was NASL or USL or whatever league they were playing at the time, A-League, if you remember back to those days, the Minnesota Thunder. So there's always been a strong culture here. And I think now the rest of the world and the rest of the country is just starting to see it with Minnesota United. And I mean, once again, just the other night, we had over 19,000 fans there and it was awesome. The noise in the stadium is amazing. And they're playing in a football stadium right now, which seats 55. So on TV, it may not look full, but once they get in that new stadium that seats only about 20, it's going to be absolutely jumping in there. And I just cannot credit the fans in Minnesota enough for really latching on. And we have fans too that have never been to a soccer game, but they're coming out now. So the soccer culture in general, from a youth level, a community level, a semi-pro level, has always been a big deal here. And it's so nice to kind of showcase it now to the rest of the country.
And having spent so much time in Minnesota, how have you seen the growth in terms of how popular the club has become in the last few months? Because from my understanding, it seems like it's a bit, as I like to call it, the shotgun club, because it was 3 months. All of a sudden, they got the accreditation to become pro. And and all of a sudden, here we have a new team in Major League Soccer. So have you seen the support growing even while the team has just started their first season?
I have, because you're right. It was a shotgun start as far as what Minnesota United wanted to do. I mean, they wanted to wrap up their NASL season before they really dug into the MLS side of things to give, you know, the NASL team a little bit of credit and a little bit of what their due was as far as attention goes. But yes, that meant that all of a sudden, you know, you're hiring Adrian Heath in November, the draft, everything's going on so quickly. Everything's coming at you. We're trying to put together a team and signed a couple of the NASL players to pro contracts with MLS. So it was a shotgun approach, but the fan base was so solid to begin with. I think that's what was really helpful, as you had that core group of hardcore fans and some middle of the road fans that are soccer oriented and their kids play soccer, but maybe they'd never been to a game before. And now they're jumping in and jumping on. And then you have the fans that have never been to a game ever before. And now they're jumping in as well, because it's just, it was covered on the news. We have two beat reporters at least, you know, at every training session for the local newspapers here. And not everybody can say that. I mean, that are pretty much dedicated to Minnesota United, if not full time. The other sports that they may cover are fall sports or sports that aren't going on right now. So we have a really dedicated group of media members that cover the team. The supporter groups are amazing. So they help get the word out and they do a lot of community events, which is huge. And that also helps get the word out. But I'll go into, you know, Lifetime Fitness, for example, the gym. And if I have a hat on or a jacket on or my daughter has one on, everybody loves the gear. You know, they are always commenting on it, or they'll say, hey, have you been to a game yet? And I'll be like, actually, I have. I go to most home games and road games. I don't tell everybody that I work for the team because I want to hear what their honest reaction is about sport and about the team. And it's been all positive. And I always tell them, hey, if you haven't been, come out to a match. You'll absolutely love it. The guys are great. The coaching staff is great. The whole front office is great. It's a really cool group to be a part of.
Well, I can imagine that the last few months have been quite a whirlwind for you, because all of a sudden this opportunity arises, this club comes in, and obviously it really has come to fruition so quickly. How do you manage all of that? All of a sudden traveling all around, and you have to go to, you know, the schedule change must have been quite dramatic.
Yeah, you know, it was a little bit of a challenge. I mean, if it was just me, myself, you know, it's a little bit easier. But, you know, my husband and my daughter have been along for the ride as well. And luckily, my husband and I met in high school in Minnesota. So his entire family is here as well. So it wasn't like I was pulling him to a place, you know, in the middle of Iowa where neither of us knew anybody. Our entire family is here. I have 16 nieces and nephews under the age of 10 that live here. So my daughter, who is 3.5, is in seventh heaven. My parents are here and retired, so they've really helped out with the scheduling as far as watching my daughter. As you know, my husband and I bounce around because he's still commuting back and forth to California. for his job, and then they're allowing him to work here as well. And so it's all good things, but yes, it took a bit of organizing, because by the time, you know, I was hired and I signed my contract and all that, it was the first week in January. So, you know, you're thinking, okay, the draft is in January, the first, second week in January. And then right away, preseason got going at the end of January. And they wanted us here pretty much full time the first week in February to start doing community events, kit release, you know, hosting things to really get our face out in the community, especially as the team had been bouncing around for preseason. They were in Arizona, Orlando, Portland. So they weren't in town much. So Cal and Jamie and I kind of became the face of the team as they were traveling around. So yes, it's been a whirlwind, but all good things. We love being home. We love being close to family. You know, we had been gone for 14 years away from family, and especially with my daughter. So, you know, we weren't planning on moving home this early, maybe eventually, but this kind of just pushed that date up a little bit. And it's been really, truly awesome. And we just absolutely, my whole family is season ticket holders to Minnesota United. And they were before I got hired, because they're all soccer. Everybody in my family is soccer. So, you know, now once I got hired, it was kind of like the icing on the cake or the cherry on top.
Wow. It was very much a match made in heaven in many more ways than one. You can see.
Yes, absolutely. I tell people it's a dream come true. I don't want to sound cliche about it, but, you know, just like I told you before we started the interview, when you can put work in quotes, because it's not really work every day, because you love what you do so much, and you can't get a much better gig than that. There's a lot of people in this world that don't necessarily get to do what they love every day. And because I do, it's just incredible.
Wow. Well, you've had quite the vast experience prior, because I believe you were broadcasting in the NBA and Major League Baseball. So I guess aside from the family being a major part, but what was really about soccer that drew you to the sport so much?
Well, you know, when I graduated from college, I majored in broadcast journalism. So I was going into it with the mindset of any and all sports is what I love and I love to be a part of. So when I first graduated, I was just taking any job that I could get at the time. And I worked for an ESPN radio affiliate in Milwaukee and then in Scottsdale, Arizona, doing, you know, baseball, basketball, hockey, football, whatever it was. And that's what I grew up with. I have an older brother and my dad were very sports oriented. So I grew up with all that. So it was familiar to me. But I played soccer all growing up, all through college. I didn't play professionally after college, mostly, you know, a combination of things, but specifically because there weren't that many options professionally after you graduated college when I did, because it was back in 2003. So I think the WPS, or it was the WUSA at the time, and there were only a handful of teams, and even those leagues didn't survive. So the only way you could really keep in touch and stay with the sport was through broadcasting. But if you remember, and I'm not sure how familiar you were, there also weren't a lot of broadcasting opportunities early on in my career, because there wasn't the Big Ten Network, the Pac-12 Network, the SEC Network, ESPNU, ESPN2, ESPN Deportes, you know, FS1, FS2, Fox Sports Plus, all these places now, that ACC Network, I could go on and on, that kids and young adults coming out of college have the chance to be a part of and broadcast. Well, I didn't have that. So you just got in sports any way you could. And then as the Big Ten Network came about in 2007, because I played at Minnesota, they approached me and said, hey, we'd love to have you, you know, color commentate some of our women's games. We'll fly you back to the Big Ten from Arizona to do these games. And so it was kind of like something that fell in my lap. And you know how it is. Once you get an opportunity, you just do the absolute best that you can to take advantage of it. And they'll keep coming and asking you to do more. And that's exactly what happened to me. And then the Pac-12 Network came along, and I was living in Arizona, so it made sense to do Pac-12 on the West Coast. And then before you know it, you know, I did some work with Fox from a professional standpoint with the women's leagues, and then also doing sideline for MLS games. And then it was the Women's World Cup in 2015, and it just has kind of evolved ever since then. Copa America doing sideline. So, you know, just how this business is, and you're in much the same position. You get an opportunity and you do well with it, and they're going to keep asking you to come back and do more. And that's really how it sort of evolved.
Exactly. When it seems like many doors don't open, all of a sudden one all of a sudden creaks, and you just got to grab and snatch at it.
Exactly. It's, you know, you get some of these once in a lifetime opportunities. And when I called my husband after my meeting with Ben Grossman, and I said, you're not going to believe what Ben said to me, because he had met Ben in Vancouver when we were there for the World Cup. So he knew who Ben was, and he knew what his connections were. And I told him, and I said, well, what do you think about this? Is it even a possibility? Because we just moved to California a year earlier. And he said, absolutely. He's like, what, you know, we'll find a way to make it work, but you can't say no to this opportunity, at least to go and interview for the job. It's not, you know, you haven't been given the job yet, but you're given an opportunity to possibly interview for it, and you have to go for it because this is a once in a lifetime thing. And so he was very supportive of it, and we've just grabbed onto it and kind of we're flying by the seat of our pants and weathering some storms along the way, but all good things.
Now, you were mentioning a bit earlier how there were so many opportunities that, of course, that grew in a very vital time, especially in sports broadcasting in America. But have you seen a big popularity rise in the MLS since they got more broadcasting rights, since it became more accessible?
Oh, absolutely. I think we've seen it grow in MLS because now if you ever go on those job sites or if you ever get any emails or if you're connected to any teams, there's so many different levels of broadcasting that you can do, even within a team. You could be social media. You could be doing digital. You could be doing the actual broadcast. Maybe they have separate radio, you know, announcers than they do TV if they're not simulcast. So there's so many different ways with every MLS club really trying to take advantage of the popularity of the sport and the expansion of the league and of the sport in general. And I'm sure when you talk to Cal, my broadcast partner, he told you about how much the sport has grown in the UK. I mean, just on Twitter this week, I saw that the Red Bulls NYCFC, the New York Derby, was played in a bar in the UK. And they had a huge fan following there where they're like sold out in a bar in the UK to watch an MLS game. So to me, that's a cool thing about how this sport has grown, not just in our country and the jobs that are available, but also just the popularity and teams in Europe or people in Europe respecting the sport and the quality it has now here in the league has now here in the US and of course in Canada.
And there's a bit of a blessing, too, because in a year like this one, there isn't exactly any major European competition happening. So people get to fill the gap in a way with North American football and to get more access to it. Because there were some times where people, or there was a time when Beckham came and then Frank yes. Lampard and Pirlo, people yes. were saying that those are players that have sold out already. They're coming to America to yes. to make yes. the big money. But what's your mm-hmm. take on that conversation?
Well, I think it's been proven now as more and more players have come over here and they're not necessarily in their prime per se, but they're not old and retired and crotchety. And the DP age has gone down quite a bit. The DP for David Beckham, which was kind of created for him in the contract that he got to come over, people viewed it as sort of an old man expensive signing. But now you have DPs that are in their mid to low 20s. They're getting paid dollars and they have choices to go other places and they're choosing to come here to MLS. And I think that really says all you need to know about it. And, you know, rumors that Ibrahimovic is going to come here. And yes, he's an older player, but still clearly a solid quality player. You have players that are a little bit older, like a David Villa, that are still dominating in this league. So, and even, you know, you look at some of the men's national team players, which aren't old per se, but a little bit, you know, getting up there like a Michael Bradley choosing to come back, you know, Clint Dempsey's still in the fold. And they could go and play other places, I'm sure, if they wanted to, or when they had chosen to come back here and play, they could have gone other places and continued their career. So I think that this league has made a big turn in that aspect, and people are seeing the quality of players from other countries, and not just England, but, you know, other South American countries and whatnot that are coming here, and their quality, and they're playing for 3, 4, 5, 6 years. And look at Robbie Keane. I mean, people loved him in L.A., absolutely loved him, and he embraced the community. He was a huge fan favorite there. So I think just in general that the mindset, and anybody who maybe still thinks that, isn't really following the league as closely as they should, or maybe, you know, us as broadcasters, we're not doing quite enough a good enough job of informing people of what this sport is and the quality that's in this league.
Well, one thing's for sure is that the quality of the football that's being played on the pitch has improved immensely. So being from Toronto, as you saw back in May,
yes.
you have Giovinco
yes.
and you have Michael Bradley, who
yes.
have that European experience, and they come at a very crucial time in their careers, and they actually do incredibly well. And even here, we've seen how much that the popularity has risen, but also it's very solid. The support is not very flaky as it might have been seen perhaps 10 years ago. But now it seems like the support is becoming, well, they wear the badge in the heart. It's not just that
yeah.
you have a lot of people. I don't know what it's like in Minnesota, but you don't see as many people come in with foreign shirts. You don't see the Manchester
yes.
United shirts,
yes.
right?
That's a great point. That's a really good point. You're right. I mean, because a lot of people, or even people that are fans of some of the European teams, some of it's about being cool, right? Like, oh, I'm a Liverpool fan, I'm an Arsenal fan, whatever it might be. And then some of it is that's the soccer they've been following and that's the soccer they've been watching because they feel like that's the quality they needed to watch on a Saturday or a Sunday or even the Bundesliga. And now they're tuning into these MLS matches and they're supporting their team with their jerseys and their players. Or if it's not your team in your city, it's an MLS team from somewhere that they are a fan of or a player that they are a fan of that they are following and supporting. So I find that a lot. And, you know, the crowd when we were in Toronto was incredible. It was awesome. And it's fun to see that, you know, you guys had to expand your stadium just to accommodate the growth of the sport in your city. And, you know, what has it taken 8 years to really get this quality, amazing roster that you guys have put together up there? So it's been fun to watch the growth in all these cities and fun to see these fans really come alive and have a team in their hometown to support. Manny Lagos, the sporting director here, at a good point one day. He's like, look, it's awesome to get together with your buddies and go to the bar on a Saturday morning when they open up at, you know, if it's Brit's Pub or something downtown Minneapolis because they're carrying the EPL, and go down and watch it. But there's something to be said for actually going to a game live and supporting your team, which you cannot do with EPL, with the Champions League, with Bundesliga, La Liga, whatever it might be. So a lot of fans that were doing that, they love in their weekend soccer from overseas. Now they're instead supporting their local teams. And there's something to be said for going to a stadium live and experiencing it.
Of course. Now, do you think with the way that soccer is expanding so rapidly in North America, do you ever think we're going to enter a multi-tiered system where we'll see, you know, more than one division on the East and West Coast?
Yeah, like a pro rel situation, or?
Well, in a way where clubs can get relegated to another division.
Yes. you know, I don't see it only because I think, you know, the United States for sure, and probably all of North America really appreciates a playoff system, a championship system, as opposed to just a cumulative season. Where do you end up in the table and what kind of record? And it's funny because you talk to some of the European players and some of the players from other countries and they don't understand. Like, they win the Supporters Shield and they think that's like the bread and butter. It takes them a while to wrap their mind around the whole concept of, like, well, yes, you had the best regular season record, but you have to be able to win the game to be considered the best. Under pressure, under that one circumstance, a team could have beat you three times that season, but then you face them in the playoffs and you lose that game, you're not going to be looked quite as highly on. So I think the United States and North America are going to continue with the playoff system because that's just sort of the culture here. And, you know, they're only planning on expanding to, 28 teams in MLS by the time it's all said and done. So and I just don't know if right now the leagues that are underneath them with USL and the NASL, if they have the system to support a pro rel situation, you know, where a team would get relegated and then those different cities and those different rosters that have those USL or those NASL teams or those lower level divisions would be able to support that kind of system as well. It would be an interesting concept and it's fun to watch the drama overseas. But I don't know that this same kind of drama could be translated to the United States or to North America.
I think especially considering how much travel happens in between. Now, let's say in England, you just travel north and south of the country.
Exactly.
Of course, it takes it some time. But from going from three time zones to across can be quite challenging.
That's a really good point. Yes, you're like, you could like hop on a train in Europe and get to the next spot. You know, so here it's a much different scenario.
Now, back to Minnesota. Of course, it's been a few months, and as we have discussed, quite the whirlwind. But as the club is enduring this moment, is there a derby that's slowly growing?
I don't think so yet. I think it's going to take a couple seasons to figure out who the real rival is for this club. And because the closest team is, Kansas City? You know, I mean, there's no one really right next door right now that you can be considered a rival just from your standpoint of your geographic location, like you get with Seattle and with Portland or even Vancouver for that matter, obviously NYCFC and the Red Bulls. I mean, some of those are so tied into just geographically, where are they located? So I don't think so yet. I think there was a bit of chip on the shoulder when Minnesota United faced Portland again the other day because they were the opening game of MLS and they got beat 5-1. So they had that circled on their calendar of when Portland was going to be coming here. So there's a bit of that right now, just still trying to prove themselves, circling games on the calendar because they know it's an important game to win or to put a good showing out there. But I don't think there's a derby game yet where you can call it a real rivalry, and it might take a season or two to really establish that.
Yeah, if there's anything I've noticed in the MLS, it seems like it's very much the on-pitch incidences that make it quite a feisty affair. So as you mentioned, with Portland, it was great to see Minnesota take that 3-2 win at the weekend. And and that was that's definitely something that will instill that kind of rivalry between two different sides, even though perhaps geographically it's not going to be the next door neighbor, but over time I think it's definitely going to get up there. Now Adrian Heath is a really well respected name around Minnesota United FC. How have you seen his philosophies grow and develop as he's endured this time in North America?
Well, I think I did not know Adrian Heath before. I mean, I knew of him, but I'd never met him or dealt with him personally until he came to the club here. And what I appreciate about him is that he's a player's coach, but he's very honest. He's not going to mince words. He's going to be honest in his assessment of himself, the coaching staff, and the players, and of the, you know, whether he's dealing with the ownership group or he's dealing with, you know, Ian Fuller sitting next to him and the coaching staff. He was respectful of everybody, but he is not going to mince words and tell you how he feels and what kind of a job you need to be doing. And I think in this day and age, that's all anybody can really appreciate is honesty and consistency, especially when it's coming from a coach. And I'm sure we've all dealt with it at some point, whether it's a coach or a boss, where you just want them to be honest and have consistent dealings with them. So Adrian Heath, love his philosophy. He's very clear in his message at training every day on the system he wants to play and how he wants to play it. And if you're not playing it right, then you're not going to be on the field. If you're not doing the things he's asking of you, you're not going to be on the field. And more importantly, if you're not putting the effort forward, you're not going to be on the field. If he has the bodies to put someone else in due to injury or international call-ups, you know, sometimes that changes the way things go. But he's very clear in his message. And I respect that about him. I appreciate that about him. He's very open and honest with us as a broadcasting crew working with the club. And even when it's a national broadcast, if it's ESPN or Fox, he's very honest with them as well. He's not afraid to tell people what's really going on. He's not hiding behind some curtain. You know, he wants people to know what the deal is. And he rewards players for effort and for good play. And he says it every week. If you make the starting 11, I don't. How you train all week is who I'm going to put on the field. You make the starting 11. You decide. You make for me, basically, is what he says. So I've really enjoyed working with him. He's been great. The whole staff has been great. And I was glad to see him get another chance after being let go from Orlando City kind of in strange fashion, as he was in the midst of a 3-year plan to sort of build that expansion franchise and felt like he didn't get the full time he needed to make that franchise work there.
So, well, it could have come down to the pressure of needing to perform, because we're also living in these times where a lot of clubs are under the pressure to perform now and now and now. Mm-hmm. Is that vibe also sort of felt around Minnesota?
Well, I think it's like any sports franchise, you know. I mean, there is absolutely pressure to perform right away, but I think when you're an expansion franchise, you know, you have to be a little bit more patient. And also the way you mentioned earlier that this roster and everything else was put together a little bit later. I mean, Atlanta had 2 years to put their club together, really. So even though they came into the league at the same year, they're very different. It's not apples to apples when you're comparing franchises as far as expansion goes. They just came in the same year. But other than that, the similarities are very near. There aren't very many similarities. So I think there's a pressure to win here, but there's more importantly a pressure just to put a good product on the field and to have quality play, and the roster and things will change. I mean, look, from the first time they played Portland to the second time they played Portland, there were only, I think, 2 or 3 guys that started both those games. So just in that, you know, 10, 12 weeks, how much the roster and the starters had changed. So I think that it'll continue to evolve as they see what they need and what is and what isn't working, but always a pressure to win. But I think being an expansion, you have a little bit more leeway for patience and making people understand, like, you want to put quality on the field, but you understand it's also a bit of a process.
Yeah, and to add to that, I think Minnesota, from what I've seen, they're a very likable team. And it's nice to see that players like Kevin Molino and Christian Ramirez, seeing those stalwarts for the club, they're probably selling a handful of shirts amongst the faithful of Minnesota.
Yeah, it is fun. I mean, you had Kevin Molino, who came from Orlando and said he wanted to be here, wanted to be with Adrian Heath. So I think that says a lot about Adrian as a coach. And Minnesota paid the most for him pretty much out of anybody. I think it was $650,000 overall, with all the different money involved in that trade. And other than that, you know, you've got guys that nobody's ever heard of, like a Francisco Calvo, who's never played in this league, but had success in Costa Rica with Saprissa and some other leagues and with the national team. And then you've got a Christian Ramirez, who's coming from NASL and trying to prove himself at the next level. So it's quite the mix, a unique mix of players coming from different places. And, you know, Kevin Molino, who had a great year in MLS, and you know, Christian Ramirez coming from NASL, and guys coming from other countries that have never stepped foot in these leagues and all proving themselves and finding a chemistry that's been really fun to watch.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. It's nice to see that it is working. Now, of course, Minnesota, I hope you guys have a great outing in New York City on Thursday. I believe that's when the game is, correct?
Yep, Thursday at Yankee Stadium.
Nice. Well, lastly, I have to ask, what are your thoughts on the upcoming World Cup for the men's national team and 2019 for the women's in France?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I think the men's national team has found a bit of something in whether it was just a coaching change with Bruce Arena. And that doesn't mean Bruce Arena is a much better coach than Jurgen Klinsmann. It just maybe meant that there needed to be some sort of a change. I mean, sometimes players just respond differently and better to other coaches or different coaches, and whatever Bruce Arena seems to be doing and the players he seems to be bringing in. It's been really fun to watch. That game in Mexico at Azteca was unbelievable and so much fun to watch. So we'll see what happens here coming up in the Gold Cup in the next few weeks. And then so Russia 2018 will be interesting. We'll see who, there's plenty of talent to make that roster, but can they put it all together? I think the biggest question for me with the men's national team has always been the back line more than anything. So we'll see what they throw out there for the rest of this summer. And then of course, heading into the World Cup and the women's national team, I think that's a bit of a changing of the guard as well. I mean, they have no real meaningful competitions until that World Cup and the qualifiers, which for women only last about 6 months before the tournament. It's not like men's where it's much more drawn out. So until they head to London to France in 2019, I think it's a bit of changing of the guard. A lot of young players that Jill Ellis is bringing in. It's been fun to watch what they're capable of. Some new faces from NWSL that are just tearing it up in the pro league, but maybe didn't get a sniff before with the women's national team. She's not afraid to bring in some new faces and challenge and have some competition for those spots. So it's been fun to watch all around, and that's the beauty of this sport. We've got pretty much two straight summers of soccer, and I don't think anybody's complaining about it.
Not at all. And I think, well, the women's team has been so dominant for quite some time, of course, winning the 2015 World Cups.
Yep.
So I think they might continue on with that good form. I think the women's team are doing well. While they have very much have a stronghold on world football. Why do you think there's been a bit of a difference between how the men's and the women's team have performed?
Well, I think a lot of it might just be not so much how they've formed in the United States as much as it is the competition around the world. I mean, you know, in Europe, I think, or in any other country, you know, soccer is a way of life for boys and men, maybe, you know, from pretty much the second they can walk, as opposed to the women. I'm not sure if it's there from the second they can step on the field, and, you know, the talent and the energy and the time that's put into women's soccer in other countries is not what quite it is in the U.S. And for the men, you know, they live, breathe, eat soccer in every other country. And so I don't know if it's so much what the U.S. is or isn't doing as it is just the competition that sort of, you know, is around the world, men's versus women. That's what I would say the biggest challenge is. It's just the different upbringings for the soccer cultures in the different countries is just different for men and women. So hopefully the men have found a way to put something together, and the women have had quite a stronghold. But at the same time, you have to remember in group play, the U.S. women weren't that dominant in Canada. And then they really turned it on in the knockout rounds and of course the final. But then in the Olympics in Rio, they didn't perform very well. So again, it's finding consistency, and some of the other countries are starting to catch up to the U.S. as well. France and Germany are always good. Brazil is always kind of right on the cusp there. So Norway, Switzerland, Sweden. So, you know, the women know that they can't really rest on their laurels with some of this talent, and they're going to have a tough one going into 2019.
Well, hopefully they can still hold strong because they are well-renowned around the world. Actually, if I can ask lastly, once again, but
sure.
What was it like for you to come to Canada in 2015 and for the Women's World Cup to have such a big focus finally on the global scale, but of course the broadcasting one as well?
It was absolutely unbelievable, amazing. I couldn't give you enough adjectives to describe it. And in fact, on Facebook, I still have memories that pop up from photos from 2 years ago when we did go to Canada for that World Cup. And I spent most of my time in Vancouver and got to go to Edmonton for the last couple matches that I did. So I didn't get to travel around Canada as much as some of the other broadcast teams. But I mean, it was one of the most amazing experiences, if not the most amazing experience I've had in my lifetime from a broadcasting perspective and from a soccer perspective, because it was fun to see the fans, the culture, how the different cities embraced it. It was fun to be a part of a massive production that Fox did so well with over there. And it literally was one of the most amazing things I think I've ever done in my life as a broadcaster or even a soccer fan. So kudos to Canada, because it was amazing. And then just from a broadcasting perspective, I could not have drawn it up any better. It was something I will remember for the rest of my life for sure.
Well, that's part and parcel of what football can bring. The emotions, of course, when your team wins, it's the best feeling. But when you don't, there you can still love it without going a little too crazy, right?
Exactly. And you know, if you're not like a diehard of a specific team or a specific player, you can just enjoy the game and go into every match going, you know what? I want this to be a really awesome game that we get to call or be a fan of. And it sometimes that makes it almost easier, because then you're not heartbroken if your team loses, or if you're, you know, the player that you're cheering for doesn't play well. You can just be a fan of the game. And there were so many good matches in that tournament. And, you know, we are in the midst of a tremendous summer of soccer with Confederations Cup and all the coverage and, you know, Gold Cup, US Open Cup. I mean, and then we'll have the International Champions Cup where the teams from Europe come over. You've got Real Madrid coming for the MLS All-Star game. So it's never ending, and you cannot be a soccer fan at a better time right now than you have right now.
Agreed, especially on this side of the pond. Well, Kendra, thank you very much for being on Touchline Radio. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. It means a lot.
Absolutely, no problem. And you know what? Let me know when you're in Minnesota. We'd love to have you over for a game.
Oh, well, I should definitely plan it before the season's up then.
There you go. Sounds good.
Well, cheers. Thank you very much. And, of course, I believe with what you're doing, you're making a big impact on a lot of people's lives. I think with your depth of knowledge and how well you understand the game, I think that's another reason why people may be starting to those that, especially that are watching your broadcasts, I think they're getting a better feel for football. And from what I experienced with yourself and Cal when you came to Toronto, it's remarkable how in-depth the analysis is becoming, but of course, the love for the game it doesn't know any bounds. It's not because it's not European, but it's because it's North American, and that's why I think it's a very positive thing.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, and we enjoyed having you in the booth, and thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
And there you have it. Kendra de St. Aubin giving her thoughts on, well, everything to do with football. If you want to give her a follow on Twitter, you can. You can find her at Kendra Sports, and that is KYNDRA. For those of you that would like to give her a follow, I'm sure she would appreciate it, and I'm sure we're going to have a talk once again in the near future. Now, if you have any questions or concerns, don't hesitate to give me a follow on Twitter as well, at Touchline Radio. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook as well. And that sums it up for me this week. And stay tuned for more as the summer rolls out. This is Adam Esker signing out. Bye-bye for now.
You've been listening to Touchline Radio.